Welcome to the Northern Affinity Video Podcast. During this session, we will be having an unedited discussion with an expert. And what I'll be planning to do is, during our discussion, get them to teach me something. Teach me about something that's of interest, but also they are an expert in. I'm Michael Edwards, and I'm the founder of the Northern Affinity. And I will tap into our wonderful community to bring you along on my drive for self-improvement and my desire to learn. So please connect with me on various social media platforms, whether it's LinkedIn or Instagram or Twitter. And I'd love to hear from you what subjects you'd like to learn more about, or what subjects you think it'd be good for me to learn about. So please, you know, get in contact and let me know. All the details will be in the show notes, and you can send me an email or contact me by the various platforms. I really hope you enjoy the show. So welcome to the latest edition of the video podcast. And today we're going to talk about food, which is a subject I quite like talking about. We're probably going to talk in a slightly different context to I normally do. So first, I want to welcome Corinne to the podcast. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, nice to be here.
Yeah, well, it's great to have you. And I think this is such an important subject matter to talk about. And I'm sure people will really kind of get a lot from this. So we're going to talk about wasting less food and kind of a little bit about what you do. So I think it'd be great to kind of find that out as a kind of starting point, really, to tell us a little bit about what you do and how you do it. And then we can kind of go into details about what the people listening and watching can do.
Okay. So my name's Corinne Bell, and I am the exec director of a social enterprise called Open Kitchen. So we are, I keep using the word weird, and I really need to stop doing that. Our model is a bit unique. So we're a registered form of not-for-profit, but we are also a company. And we work with a huge range of food businesses to intercept perfectly edible food that will otherwise go to waste. So beautiful food, perfectly nutritious, healthy, whatever, not moldy, not bad, but it's going to end up in a bin. And we also buy ingredients, and everything we buy is locally sourced, sustainable. We work shortest supply chains we can. So we work with a lot of local independent producers. We work with other social enterprise producers. And the idea, I guess, of that mix is that we're intercepting food waste. So we're highlighting some of the problems with our global food system. And then we're also hopefully showing some of the solutions, which for us is about local food, seasonal food, sustainably produced food, small independent businesses, short supply chains, all of that good stuff. And we use that ever-changing mix to run an outside catering business. And we run a cafe and bar in Manchester city centre. And that cafe and bar is based at the People's History Museum. So we're also the in-house caterer at the People's History Museum. So we do everything from simple sandwich platters, and, you know, you're having a meeting, you're having a workshop, you're having a conference, right up to, we do weddings, we do gala dinners, we do canapé and fizz events. It's the whole spectrum. And I have essentially a wizard level band of chefs who play the biggest game of Ready, Steady, Cook you have ever seen in your life, because they never know what's coming.
Oh, it's amazing. And I think it's one of those subjects, isn't it, food waste, for someone like myself anyway, that we see bits on the news over the time and we hear it. But I don't know, it just kind of doesn't, nothing seems to change or be done about that in the wider context. So I think it'd be really important for myself, you know, why is it important? Why do we need to waste less food? And I think there's a simple answer, probably a more complex answer, I'm sure. But why do we need to do it?
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody gets, you know, we're all mammals. We need to eat to survive. There's a sort of very intrinsic way in which you get why perfectly edible food going to waste while there are people going hungry. You know, even if there aren't people going hungry, this is, you know, it's perfectly edible. Why is it going to waste? I think the thing that most people don't quite get, because food is a natural product, you know, you think about apples, bananas, I think people assume that going to waste will have a lower carbon impact than, say, you know, plastic going to waste. But actually, food, because it's such a global system, every time we waste food, if you think about that food being grown, being harvested, being transported, whenever we're wasting food, you're not just wasting an apple. It's been grown, so we've wasted soil. It's been watered, so we've wasted massive amounts of water. It's been harvested, which is huge diesel-powered machinery. Now it's been packaged, which can involve cardboard, plastic, all sorts. It's been transported. Again, that's vans. It's massive shipping containers. With some products, it's air freight. You know, it's air miles. And then it's a lot of it's been refrigerated. So that's refrigerant chemicals, it's energy. It's, you know, the carbon footprint of our food system is about a third, is the estimate of our entire carbon footprint. So it's not just there's a piece of food there. It's the whole infrastructure that goes into that. And actually the carbon footprint of it's massive. So, you know, Greater Manchester, for example, has set a target to be carbon neutral by 2038. You can't get there without the food bit. You can't ignore the food bit and just go, well, no, it's about transport and buildings and energy. It's absolutely not.
Absolutely. And do we have any kind of, I don't know if you have any kind of indications of such how much food is wasted, whether kind of on the bigger scale or just us as individuals. And obviously, again, we're all different, I'm sure. But do we have any kind of indication of what that is? Because I would openly admit, I know that I'm guilty of, oh, no, look at this food that's gone out of date in the fridge. And yeah, throwing it in the bin. I know it happened. I'm sure just about everybody has done it, probably more than we would like. And obviously there's the financial implications on an individual level, but also kind of that, like you quite rightly articulated, the kind of the environmental impact as well.
Yeah. So the figures are tricky because there's a lot of, one of the things we know is there's a lot of issues with recording and reporting food waste. So estimate, and it is a, I mean, it's a guesstimate, is about 15 million tons of food is wasted in the UK alone every year. And globally, the figure is around 1.3 billion tons of food. And the impact in terms of cost to the consumer, I think the most recent figures I've seen from WRAP, which is the Waste and Resource Action Programme, was about £700 a year is what consumers, are, you know, the average family is buying that food and they're just not getting around to using it. And that's, you know, as everybody's gas and electric bills are going up, that's really significant.
Oh, I can believe that figure 100%. You know, just kind of anecdotally, I guess, for myself, and I know it's something, again, funnily enough, my seven-year-old has told me off for this not long ago about stuff like this, and I think that often the younger generation are very well educated on this one. So I think on an individual level, yeah, you can see how that really easily happens. And you quite rightly said, when you think about the energy cost, for example, if you know, if you stop that £700, that could make a big dent into that extra money that we're all spending at the moment.
Yeah. I think the other thing that's tricky is, so there's some slightly misleading information out there that seems to suggest that consumers are the biggest sort of portion of the problem. And I think actually the reality of that is there have been an awful lot of studies into consumer waste. You know, individuals, families will let researchers into their homes. There've been big studies literally letting researchers dig through the family's bin and kind of go, well, what food have you thrown away? Or, you know, you need to asking families, you know, can you keep a register for, you know, X number of weeks of every piece of food that you throw away? So the figures in relation to consumer waste are probably really accurate, but big food businesses are not as open. You know, they're not letting researchers dig through their bins. They are deciding how they record and report. There's no external auditing or verification. And there's, you know, waste, for example, at the farm level. If a farmer loses a contract because there's been some monkeying around with contract prices, or if a big food business puts pressure on a farmer to reduce the price and it, you know, the farm folds or whatever, waste that doesn't get harvested never gets reported and recorded, because who's going round and counting the heads of cabbage that were rejected by, for example, a, you know, a major supermarket because they were the wrong shape, wrong size. too wonky for the wonky veg brand. You know, there's a lot of food that goes to waste every year that is just not accounted for in any stats, and that's tricky.
Yeah, and I guess for me, it feels like this is one of those things that's a very much, it's almost like, well, it's a cultural issue in terms of, I guess we've probably, the last couple of generations have been brought up on food is generally easily to access and supermarkets and, you know, the big, that's, you know, even when I was younger, the supermarkets weren't really that big as they are now, and it's just easier to get a hold of it. So we culturally, I guess we value it less, and I'm not talking about a financial value, but and maybe obviously over the last couple of years we've seen various things like shortages of various foods and things like that, which may kind of be the start of us changing our attitude towards it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think there's definitely something there. We've been, you know, steadily since the kind of 50s, really, you know, we've had, in the Western world, at least, you know, I'm talking about England and, you know, America, Western Europe, when I speak in these terms, we've had peace, we've had abundance, we've had, you know, that, yes, there've been, you know, crashes and bumps, but not to the same scale that we've seen, you know, in historical periods previously. So I think we have had this kind of steady, as the supermarkets have risen and big brands have risen, you've had this sort of supermarkets doing research into what consumers want and then meeting that expectation. Then the consumers getting used to that, and then the supermarkets doing more research, and you just slowly but surely end up in this situation where what the supermarkets know is that if you can get consumers through the door and offer them this kind of lovely setting with infinite abundance and infinite choice, or the illusion of infinite abundance and infinite choice, then it, you know, it's a pleasant experience. They buy more. And it, you know, the tricky thing about food is it doesn't go to waste when it's bad or it's moldy or it's gonna make someone sick. Food is a business. Food goes to waste when it's cheaper to dump it from the system than it is to keep it in the system. And if, you know, supermarkets and big food businesses, they're there to make money. They're businesses. They're not there to feed the world. They're not, you know, they're a lot of them, their focus is not on nutrition. And if they can get you to buy more, whether or not you need it, whether or not you're going to use it, that's what they're here to do. You know, and this idea that the supermarket is your friend and it's there to supply the essentials that you need. And, you know, if I hear the phrase, every little helps, one more time, I might punch someone. It's, you know, they're businesses. They're here to make money. And if they can sell you, am I allowed to say crap? If they can sell you crap you don't need, they'll do it.
Absolutely. And I think obviously kind of on that point, everything is becoming easier and easier as well with, and probably one of the things that's come from the pandemic in terms of food is things like getting home delivery of food. Because when it removes the barriers, there's a good thing to that. There's time and saving and all that kind of stuff. But something is viewed so easily to come by. It's like I said, it's less valued, isn't it? So
yeah.
For me, there's kind of two questions in one there, which is what could I or the individual do in terms of what we do at home, you know, with the food we put in our fridge and then throw out or not, what we put in our cupboards and all that kind of stuff. What kind of things could we do there to make it better? And I guess the second part of that is what can we do, I don't know if it's putting pressure, but what can we do to change our habits that will ensure that bigger businesses, whether it's the supermarkets or restaurants or whatever it is, change because they're almost being put under pressure to do so? Because as you quite rightly said, they are, you know, the commercial organization. So there's kind of two parts to that question. Does that make sense?
Yep. Okay, so habits as an individual or as a family, supporting local independent businesses is great. Small business, we were talking about this just prior to starting to record. Running a small business, as I'm sure your community knows, is really hard work, and you don't do it a lot of people don't do it for the money. If you find a small independent business who has a particular niche, you know, they're really into, you know, artisan bakeries, who are really into their, you know, whatever style of baking, or there's lots of small independent packaging free shops now, or, you know, you do get shops like the, we have a brilliant one, the Unicorn Grocery in Manchester, in South Manchester, who are a cooperative and are obsessed with sustainability and kind of do all the research for you. Short supply chains, so the closer you can get, the least number of steps between you and the person who is producing it will always reduce waste. Small independent businesses will always reduce waste. Buying what's seasonal and local, you know, obviously looking out for things like how far has it traveled, and where has it been produced. You know, there's food waste is one side of the coin. And then I think, you know, also what we look at is just that more sort of holistic picture of sustainability and ethics in food. And that, you know, is all about the transport miles and who produced it and what did they get paid, and you know, is it organic, is it sustainable, are the people who are producing that food looking after the soil for future generations? There's a whole host of issues in that. And I guess the other thing is, start with what's in your fridge. You know, I think all of us are guilty of opening the fridge, opening the cupboards, and there's loads of ingredients there. There's loads of food, but you will still find yourself saying, oh my God, there's nothing to eat. And I think if you get creative, the point at which you open the fridge and say, there's nothing to eat, you're probably a solid, you know, let's say maybe 15 meals away from actually going hungry. So, a nice challenge can be go home, open the fridge, because that will be where your, you know, perishable food is. Have a look at the dates on everything, work out what's going to go off first. And that's the recipe you need to make for tonight. That's the, you know, you've got to make a recipe around that to get it used up.
No, absolutely. And when we say nothing to eat, what we mean is nothing easy to eat, don't we? That's what we mean. We're being honest. I think it's probably, you know, I kind of used the word cultural earlier, and I think probably one of the other issues, isn't it, that maybe our lives are so fast-paced now that, and I know I'm guilty of it, that doing things that are a little bit more complex, we're less likely to do it because of everything else that's going on. And maybe, I mean, again, maybe one of the things that came from the pandemic, you know, there was the whole everyone making their own bread and everything like that that came from that, wasn't there? And maybe that's something that can come back again, is if we, yeah, we, I guess it goes back to education, doesn't it? In terms of knowing what to do, because I know that I'm not very good at that stuff, but I'm sure that it wouldn't be that difficult for me to go onto YouTube and or find a few things online and be able to put something together. I'm sure it's not that difficult.
Yeah, and I think it's just about finding what suits you. Like, I know loads of different people who have found a way to incorporate cooking from scratch into their lives. And they're not using the same techniques. They're finding something that fits their lifestyle, that fits their, you know, so some people go for that, you know, there's books, websites, YouTube videos, whatever, around 15 minute meals. So you can decide that you're going to find meals that are really quick and you can just come home and make it essentially faster than you could get a takeout delivered, and that'll be the thing that keeps me cooking from scratch and using up food waste. And then some people go, I've got a slow cooker, and that's great because in the morning before I go to work, I can chop everything, throw it in, and then when I come home, my tea is prepared, and that stops me from, you know, buying really processed convenience food or getting a takeout or constantly going buying, you know, ready meals or things that are convenient, that means I'm wasting things at home. And then I've got some friends who batch cook. So you just go, I will cook, but I'm only doing it one day a week. And I'm going to make a massive pan of this and a massive pan of that and a massive pan of this. And it's all getting labeled in Tupperware and going in the freezer. And then for the rest of the week, I just reheat stuff in a microwave, but it's a good home cooked meal. And those tend to be cheaper ways to eat as well. You know, if you think about, it's not just the food waste implications. I think we are all thinking more about budgets. And if you buy, you know, even cheap ready meals, actually you can make yourself a massive batch of like a nice vegan dal that will be high fiber, low salt, low sugar, really nutritious, full of vitamins. You can make liters of the stuff for the price of a cheap ready meal and, you know, make way more meals that way. So I think it is, there's a number of benefits, and I think it's just about working out what suits you and trying a few different methods and not being afraid of just trying and failing as well. There's nothing wrong with selling your slow cooker secondhand on eBay. We've all done it.
Well, because one of the things I'm interested to ask you, and I've just thought about it then actually, was there's obviously one of the things that's become quite popular in the last few years is the likes of Gusto, HelloFresh, those type of businesses where, you know, I've used them before. And one of the benefits I've in my mind has always been less food waste is because I get the exact ingredients what I need for that particular meal. Now, I don't think it's an option in terms of cost saving. Actually, I think it might be, and so if you're wasting a lot of food, because you're not wasting food, but actually, I think the main benefit is the lack of, or it feels like to me, is the lack of waste, because you only get, and the problem with supermarkets, you go in, you have to buy a big box pack or whatever it is of these, sometimes the relatively unusual things that you might not use every day, and then it might go out of date and things like that. Is that something that you think is better, or... be interesting to know your thoughts, really. Just something that popped into my head during the discussion.
Would you be surprised to hear that it's very complex and there's not really an easy answer?
Yes, it would be.
That's my answer to every question, basically.
Of course. Yeah.
Okay, so sometimes for the consumer, yes, those kind of box meals where you get exactly what you need can reduce food waste. One of the tricky playoffs is they tend to massively increase the amount of plastic waste because you've got tiny little amounts of ingredients now in little pots, in little bags. I think there are a couple of the brands now that are going for 100% compostable, so it'll be more paper card, but it's a lot of packaging that's being produced that then has to be recycled. And, you know, that, again, all of that whole infrastructure around recycling, you know, it's got to be collected, it's got to be processed, it's got to be, there's a big carbon footprint just to recycling. Mm-hmm. So starting to create a lot more packaging is tricky. And then the other thing is all of those brands very proudly promote, you know, you'll waste less food because you'll get exactly what you need. But how much are they wasting? Because they don't know what you're going to order. And they've got every meal you could possibly order in stock constantly. I know a couple of people who have worked behind the scenes in, I will not name any brands, but in a particular brand, and have said that the scale of waste in the warehouse for those brands is kind of massive. But again, never reported on.
Yeah, it's really just because, you know, in my mind, that was, and you're quite right, some of the things you've said there, you know, when you think about it, it's kind of obvious, is that there's obviously the packaging element of it, which, so you know, robbing Peter to pay Paul type of thing. But it's also what are they wasting in the background? Now, if they were doing something with that food that's not used and recycling or whatever it is, you know, doing it, something with it, and obviously that would be, I assume, better, but it's kind of that, almost, it feels like a simple solution for someone at home, so you feel happier about that, and it's all done with the best intentions.
Yeah, but... and I can't, like, I never, you know, obviously when you work in an area like food waste, you do see an awful lot that consumers, members of the public, don't get to see, and it can make you very cynical, and I never like to just, you know, is this a solution? No. That's all rubbish. You've got, you know, the idea that we're all going to go back to cooking from scratch and making a home-cooked nutritious meal every evening, it's rubbish, because we don't go back. We move forward in different ways. And I think if those kind of package meal, you know, cook from scratch boxes, I don't think they're the devil. They're not evil. And I kind of like to think of them always like as a gateway drug to cooking, Like, if that gets you started because you don't know many recipes, you haven't cooked before, and it gives you some successes, so you start to think, hey, I can do this, I can cook. And then slowly but surely, you know, if you've got one box meal that you've ordered a few times and you go, actually, do you know what? I'm going to make this regularly now. So it does make sense to go and buy a bag of onions and a jar of that spice rather than getting a little bit. You know, if that can be a kind of gateway drug almost to enjoying cooking and getting some successes, then I think that's great.
Well, weirdly enough, as you're talking then, I know for me, so we've had them before, we don't do it now. And part of the reason is because myself, I learned about trying things, and it definitely doesn't always work out well. I will say that, but I definitely feel like a bit more, it's going to take a bit of confidence just to, you know, throw a load of stuff in a pan or, as you say, a slow cooker, whatever it might be, stir it all up and kind of hope it comes out. And sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't, but definitely do more of it because of that experience. So,
yeah, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You know, if you use those meal kits every single evening for 5 years, the amount of packaging you'd rack up would be, you know, pretty significant. But if you did one a month or one every couple of weeks to get some inspiration to keep you interested in cooking from scratch, that has a lot of benefits. So I think it is, you know, it's never all good or all bad. And I always like to be as kind of positive as I can, because I think sometimes sustainability can just feel like you're basically just being asked to do without.
Yeah.
Like, you know, no packaging, no meat. We've all got to be vegan. No one's allowed to take out coffee because the cups are evil. And, you know, it can just feel like constantly getting preached at. And that's not getting anyone on board. It's not bringing anybody with us, which is, you know, which is not going to solve the problem.
Well, yeah, you just really nice segue, actually. That was the question I was going to ask next, was about vegan and, I suppose, vegetarian within that as well. Yeah. What role does that have to play when it comes to, I guess, to do with waste, but also the environmental sustainability bit? Because that's something we do, you know, for some people, vegan, it's a health choice, I guess, or for some people, it's a social kind of animals, cruelty to animals type of a choice. For other people, it's an environmental decision. So it'd be interesting to what role it is playing, and I guess obviously will play as we move forward.
Yeah. Again, I think it's, at the moment at least, it's about balance. And I suppose my priority is about making sure that on a sort of journey towards sustainability, we're taking as many people with us as we can. I can't remember whose banner it was, but I saw a really great, I think it was outside one of the packaging free shops, a kind of A board that said, if we're going to make a difference, I don't need 100 people doing it perfectly. I need 1 billion people doing something. And that, you know, if you think about the impact, if you get 1 billion people around the globe to go to understand that meat should be a treat and I should eat it less frequently, that's going to have more impact than getting a small number of really committed people to go completely vegan. So I think, you know, yes, a plant-based diet is more sustainable. It has a lower carbon footprint. And that's just, you know, in terms of land use, if you're growing crops to feed people, then that's a very direct route. If you're growing crops to feed them to an animal, to feed that animal to people, it's just, you know, and particularly cows and sheep, you know, they belch methane, they take up a lot of land. It's, you know, there's all sorts of implications. Open Kitchen as a catering service and as a cafe is not strictly vegan or strictly vegetarian. We do intercept meat that will otherwise go to waste. And we do also purchase meat. When we purchase, it's directly from small local farms who we know, where we know, you know, A, they're treating the animals well, there's high welfare, they're getting to, you know, be out in the light, in a field, living a natural life. And we, you know, we tend to have a good balance on our menus of some vegan dishes and some veggie dishes, and then, you know, a small number of meat dishes and just kind of really push that idea that meat can be part of a reasonably sustainable diet. There just needs to be less of it. You know, again, we've had since the sort of 50s, I think we've just been, meat has been more readily available. Mass farming, mass rearing practices have come in. And we've ended up in a situation where, you know, some people are having meat three times a day, which I don't think your colon wants, apart from anything else. I just don't think your body needs that.
Yeah, and I think it's, again, it goes back to this cultural idea, doesn't it? When you say a meal, or especially an evening meal, to most people, kind of, if you ask them to imagine what that is, it's a piece of meat, a few bits of veg, and something potato-based.
Yeah.
Essentially, that's kind of the stereotypical meal, isn't it? And again, it's changing those ways, which, in my opinion, comes from education and trying to build. I think you quite rightly said earlier, you can't change things overnight. You can't, everyone change their habits, everyone do things. It's just not going to happen, unfortunately. If we can do it slowly, quick enough, but people's individuals change slowly, then it can, that's where the difference can be.
Yeah, and in a way that feels positive as well. Mm. You know, it's not just about taking meat out of your diet. It's about a transition. It's about, you know, new recipes, new inspiration. You know, one of the nice things about our modern world is we are incredibly global. And I think that makes a difference. You know, if you have, you know, in England, for example, if you have a very English diet, which, let's face it, does not involve traditionally a huge amount of spice or flavoring. Yep. You know, then if you take the meat away, then yeah, what you're left with essentially is some roast potatoes, a bit of veg, and you know, if you're making gravy traditionally, you've even lost the gravy.
It's pretty bland, isn't it, basically?
It's not great. But if you go Indian, if you go Thai, if you go Hawaiian, if you go Middle Eastern, you know, there's some absolutely delicious options there that don't involve meat, that involve a really decent amount of protein, that involve a good amount of fiber, that, you know, are nutritionally balanced and also really delicious.
Oh, absolutely. So I guess last question from me would be, is there anything that either I haven't asked about, things that people can do or things that you do as well that you kind of think might be important for people to have a little think about or to hear about? Is there anything I haven't covered?
Well, I mean, I'm going to go for the shameless plug, if I may.
Yeah, I would love a shameless plug. Please go for shameless plug.
So for members of the community who are based in Greater Manchester, Open Kitchen runs an events catering service. We are a social enterprise. We are a real living wage employer, which is still very unusual for food and drink. We are incredibly sustainable and ethical, and all of the profits from the catering business go to provide grocery parcels and nutritious meals to people who are struggling, which has been about the pandemic, now is about cost of living. Yep. So we offer a huge range of catering services, and we can pop a link to our website somewhere involved in all of this.
Yeah, so what I'll say is what we'll do is, so this will go out on YouTube, but plus all the podcast platforms. In the notes on either one, there will be both your details, where they can find out more. So anything like that, we'll put in there so people can click on that. For whatever reason, if you can't see it, for whatever reason, you're listening or watching this, give me a shout and I can point you in the right direction as well.
Okay. Well, just in case anybody doesn't get it, we are openkitchenmcr.co.uk. And extra to the catering services, we're also, because people do seem more and more interested in food waste and sustainability, we're doing offering now talks and workshops and lunch and learn events, and even like team building activities. So we're offering things like sustainable wine tasting evenings for some of our corporate customers, and like local cheese tastings, or what was the other one we did? Kimchi and pickle making. You know, they're great ways to reduce food waste and kind of a fun process. So we're doing more activities, workshops, talks as well. So for anyone in Greater Manchester who would like to be full and happy, but also feel really smug about themselves, get in touch with Open Kitchen.
I think the smug about it is the most important thing.
It's a win-win-win, you know? Get fed, feel really smug, know you've done good in the world, just by filling your face. Who doesn't want that?
Oh, well, it sounds good. And now I'm hungry. Recording this just before lunchtime probably wasn't the best idea, but there we go. Whatever happens, I'm going to have to go to a very empty fridge and make something. I can't do what I would normally do.
You can't take out now.
I'm not saying it's not been known. That's all I can say. So thank you very much for your time, Corinne. I think that's really interesting. I've definitely picked up a lot, and I'm sure a lot of people will have done as well. So thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed this chat today, and like me, you learned something new from our wonderful expert. So if you'd like to hear from more of our sessions, please subscribe on whatever platform that you get your podcast from to hear more. And also, we'd love to meet you at some point at one of our upcoming events. The Northern Affinity hold events all across the north of England, and we'd love to meet new people and then have guests along. So please come along and check out our website or all the details in the show notes. Thank you very much for listening, and see you next time.